Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Worst year ever.
But I thought the previous one was. And the previous one to that, and the previous one to that, and the previous one to that.
Yeah.
And yes. You were wrong.
How time works, I see.
We all thought that, and it was until the new year arrived, and here we are in it. The current worst year ever. Guys, how's it going?
I'm just enjoying Cody's hair right now.
We're doing great.
It's perfect for an audio medium.
Yeah.
Got some Ed Grimley stuff going on.
I mean, as we've always said, Cody has the perfect hair for radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a guy I was dating who once told me I had a face for radio.
Well, fuck
that's
him.
Not a nice thing
fuck
for
I know, but
him.
I you have an excellent face.
Did I? He was joking, and he didn't. He thought we were young, but
I love humor.
I want to finish the story. I'll say that at the time went right over my pretty little head, and I took it as a compliment. I was like, "Thank you. I've always wanted to work in radio."
Oh no.
Anyway,
can we all email him?
Yeah, what? Yeah, seriously.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's a really great guy. A pop punk band did write a song about him that was mean.
What? About him?
Yeah. He got into like a fight with the lead singer in high school, and they wrote their one hit wonder. It was a song about him.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they
amazing.
Played it all over local radio. I hope he's not listening. He is a wonderful person. Anyway.
Well, I don't like him.
I hate him. Yeah.
No. There's only one X we don't like, and this one's fine. Let's talk about the show.
Okay. What is our show? What do we do for a living?
What's in the news?
Who are we? What is my name?
Why are we? Actually, what?
That's
like
a
humanity.
Better question. Yeah.
This is what I describe to my relatives as on-demand radio, aka a podcast.
Yes. And the downloadable radio.
And the three of you are the hosts of said podcast.
Oh.
So today. We're just stalling here because the subject that we're going to dig into is very dark.
Yeah.
Today we're going to be talking about Afghanistan, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More like, Afghanistan.
I saw some comments.
It is much more like that.
I saw some comments after our last week's episode, like, no talk about Afghanistan. Guys,
there's a lot going on in the world.
There's a lot going on.
And also... The Taliban went from, like, you know, fighting in the mountains to taking over most of the populated areas of Afghanistan in roughly a week. So
yeah, about the time. Like, news was breaking after we recorded of stuff. Right. And
well, also,
you have to give things a beat before you talk about them.
Yeah, I feel like one of the problems we run into these days, especially, is that everybody has to have an opinion the second something happens, and then make claims about things the second it happens.
Regardless,
and with that in mind, Cody, how would you have invaded Afghanistan?
Faster and bigger,
bigger,
much
bigger.
More money,
more money,
a few more years.
Yeah, I would have.
I feel like 25 years would have given it to us.
Right, I would have said, like, all right. In 25 years, if things aren't going our way, 25 more years.
I'll say,
like, lay out a plan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A 50-year plan in 25-year
exactly,
increments.
Clear.
That
exactly.
is perfect. Yes.
Dig into all of this. Yeah, 20 years. 20 years. I it's interesting because all of this, you know, Biden's big idea would be to have everybody out of there before the 20th anniversary of September 11th.
He did it
thinking that would be symbolic and beautiful in some way, but instead what we're seeing is a catastrophe, and the soldiers and people that have fought in this 20-year war, a lot of soldiers, people who fought in this war then had children who grew up to fight in this war, or you know, and instead of seeing this as a beautiful moment of symbolism, it is
There was no, nothing about this has ever been beautiful. Yeah.
No, beautiful. That's the absolute wrong word. But whatever reason Biden is saying, we're like going to be of it, out right? of here
like,
by
he wants
the,
to like, well, yeah.
yeah.
We're making that moment. We're like, we'll look back and we'll be like, we did it. Whatever it was, we're not going to talk about, but we definitely did it.
Leaving Afghanistan is the new invading Afghanistan.
Yeah, God,
and instead, 20 years later, we left and nothing has been accomplished. Some stuff has been accomplished.
I mean,
a lot of bad things have been accomplished.
It kind of depends on your definition of accomplish.
I know.
I have been chatting a little bit with an anarchist activist in Afghanistan, an Afghan woman. And I've got a little bit on that. I'm still getting her responses translated. So I think we'll Afghanarchist. Yeah. She's currently trying to get out of the country because all hope is more or less lost.
Yes. But, many people would like to leave the country now.
Yeah. Many people would like to get the fuck out. We'll talk about that a little bit, probably in a later episode. I'll kind of give more of her responses because I'm still getting them. It's a whole chain of translations that need to happen in order to make this. But, I think it might be interesting to start. I think it might be valuable to start kind of with each of our, like, when did you first learn that Afghanistan was a place? I'm going to guess it was around 9/11 for all
of us. It was around 9/11.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm kind of curious as to everyone, like, just kind of what were y'all, because we haven't talked about, like, you know, what were you doing on 9/11? What were you doing when we started this now endless series of wars?
My dad woke me up in the morning, 9/11. And I was in high school to watch the news coverage and we went to school and got to first period and they sent everybody home and a bunch of my girlfriends came over and we continued to watch the news during the day and felt very afraid, you know?
Yeah.
You know, with the marketing.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Similarly, I was in high school, we were, I guess it was like a 3-hour difference, so that actually makes sense that I was not woken up and told about it. I was in class, and then they, like, you know, every class rolled in the TV to watch. I had one class where the teacher was like, no, we're not thinking about that. We're doing school, and that didn't go well. It was very surreal. And at that age, you also don't have, like, a super solid grasp of the world, right?
And you don't know yet to question, or at least I didn't.
No.
To question, like, what you're being told.
I think one of the things that's harder for, you know, younger folks or folks who kind of, you know, maybe were too young to really be super cognizant of that time, you go back at how hysterical all of the media was. And I think there's two things that are necessary, which one of which is understanding that, yes, all of the adults in our world at that period of time lost their goddamn minds entirely. Or nearly all. There were some people who were desperately trying to be voices of sanity, but nobody listened to them.
Yeah, there were a few. Yeah.
Yeah, but as a child, like, I think I was like 13 when that happened. It was perfectly reasonable to be like blindly terrified because as a child, you take your cues from the adults around you. And when those planes hit the towers in the Pentagon, every single adult in my world lost their entire goddamn mind for months. Like, people were out of their gourds. Kids in my high school, or not high school, in my middle school were like panicked that Al-Qaeda was going to attack our suburban middle school and stuff. Like, and those were pretty common reactions.
Yeah, especially since, I mean, we started this by you asking us when was the first time we'd heard of Afghanistan or, you know, and obviously we were kids, so that's part of it. But in general, America is not a place that is concerned with what is happening in other places. So I would say that a lot of the adults in our lives.
Yeah.
If people know very little about the region now, they knew virtually nothing then.
Yeah. They, I mean, it's hard to say because they thought they knew.
I mean, they should.
Less. They may know less now because of how much disinformation there is, but whatever.
Yes. But you get my point.
Yeah. It's, you know, people lost their minds and there was this, like, when people have been sharing kind of some of the images from popular magazines, like that famous drawing of like Osama bin Laden's cave fortress that never existed. Like just was complete fancy. Like somebody paid a graphic designer to draw like a fucking D&D castle under a mountain in Afghanistan. and then everyone was convinced that like Bin Laden was a part of, had a whole army there in the, the motherfucker left almost immediately. Like, and it was like the realities of the situation, right? You can talk about how much blame gets apportioned to the Taliban for 9/11. But at the end of the day, a lot of them, and like most of the Taliban leadership, were very unhappy with Bin Laden because, like, they didn't want a hornet's nest kicked up. And in fact, the Taliban made an offer in 2001, like, hey, we'll give you the guy. Like, we'll fucking get him for you. Like, you don't have to come in here and fuck up our shit. And, you know, there were peace overtures. It's one of those things, I think, prior to what's happening now, when you would try to tell people, like, hey, the Taliban tried to give him up. They were willing to, like, negotiate and talk and even potentially form a coalition government to avoid years of war. Folks would say, well, it's the Taliban. They were clearly lying. They never would have agreed to any arrangement. Like, they would have wound up in charge anyway. And it's like, up in charge, and it cost us $3 trillion.
I mean, that was the rationale.
Maybe we could have tried. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we could have fucking tried.
They're not giving him up. So we got to go.
But they absolutely offered to give him money. Anyway, I don't know. It's all very silly.
I mean, like, you know, freedom fries, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think the reaction from adults kind of helped me quickly realize how silly the whole thing was.
Yeah.
Like, looking around, I was like, wait, what did this do to you? And, like, why are we even doing this? But then 20 years passed and babies from that period.
Yeah. And like people for whom the actual, like, there were, they did a pretty good job, they being the Bush administration, of convincing people in the immediate lead up to the war that, like, we were in immediate danger and, like, this was, and that was obviously nonsense. I'm not saying there was anything to it, but they convinced a lot of people of this. But most of the soldiers who have fought over there, like, many of them probably can't even remember a time in which they legitimately believed there was a threat emanating from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like a place where we sent young men to get hurt and to hurt other people for unclear reasons.
Yeah, the vague specter of terrorism.
Yeah, and you know, there's always people, you find a reason. Some of it is, like, there were, I know a lot of guys over there, you know, you find ties with locals, with, like, Afghan commandos, with, activists in the region, people who are trying to, like, improve their lives. And you kind of focus on that little narrow thing. But there's never been a cohesive, like, vision for what we should have been doing there, other than that one brief moment of panic. And that's carried us into there for the last 20 years. And part of the reason why is that, like, as soon as we invaded Afghanistan, it became obvious to even the irrationally exuberant that, like, this was not going to be a clean or an easy process. And there was probably never going to be the kind of PR victory where you get.
We knew that at the beginning.
Yeah, anyone reasonable knew that at the beginning.
Within, like, a couple years, a year. You
know? Well, yeah, very immediately we were like, oh, this is a bad idea.
Well, if the quote enemy is, like, this sort of amorphous, like, concept, then, like, what are the conditions for victory? What's the thing that needs to happen for you to say we did it? Because also, if we went in specifically because we wanted to get Bin Laden, like, well, we will, but then we go in, he's dead.
We did it. We did it. 12
and
years
also,
ago, however long ago.
He'd been out of the country for years by the time we got
there. He didn't die in Afghanistan.
No, he did not. It's all, like, there's so many frustrating aspects to it, but it's one of those, I guess what I was getting at is, like, one of the things that's most frustrating to me right now is that all of the coverage of what a disaster this is focused on either Trump, if you're a Biden supporter, or Biden, if you're a Trump supporter.
Well, it's got to be one or the other.
A little tricky minx named George W. Bush has just kind of skittered away from accountability.
It's
like
really
a fucking possum stealing garbage
remarkable
in the night. And it's
and so
very
frustrating.
One of the
How
things,
is this happening?
One of
I mean,
the
even
things
Obama,
that happened.
Like, Obama was president for 8 years and said, you know, many times that we're going to stop, we're going to get out.
And he increased our military presence there.
Yeah, he had a surge that was a disaster. He had it because, like, look, the bulk of the blame, in my opinion, if you're apportioning blame to presidents as presidents. And I want to stay here for the purposes of Biden. I'm talking about his blame as president, as opposed to like whatever you want to apportion to him as, you know, a member of the Congress.
Right, Congress during the time, yeah.
But as presidents, the blame in order of most to least goes in the actual order of the presidents. Most
right,
blame,
exactly, yeah.
George W. Bush. Second most, Obama. Third most, Trump. Fourth most, Biden, right? Like that's because... And really, Obama does deserve a lot of focus and blame because he did have a choice as to whether is this going to be a fuck up the Republicans did that like we're out. This was a bad idea from the beginning. We never had a plan, and I'm not going to just keep murdering people for nothing in the mm-hmm. desert. And well, not the desert, but I'm not going to keep murdering people for nothing. I'm not going to just like escalate these drone strikes. I'm not going to fight. It was Obama who made. Bush made the decision.
Well, it's
to
accepting the framing yeah. of the situation. Yeah. Like it's saying, it, like, well, you know, it was they're doing it wrong, but yeah. we should still be there. We still have to be there.
Also,
it's accepting the framing, and it was also what Obama did was found a way to make it sustainable. And I don't mm-hmm. mean that in like a financial sense, but I mean in a public opinion sense. He found a way to keep the war going and keep the killing going without. Enough, but in such a way that few enough American soldiers died that it was never news.
Because right. we didn't want to be upset, or people in general, you know, who would generally be upset with the war, love Obama, and look away. That's the years of complacency. Those are the years where everyone's like, I'm tired of being upset. Let's yeah. just, like, yeah. live our lives
so
in
bad.
Brunch.
Yeah.
And it's not so yeah. bad. And I
we
trust Obama.
Wanna...
Obama's a good guy. He's going to make the right choices.
Yeah.
I would push back just slightly on your framing of order of responsibility and say that Trump and Biden are tied. In my mind, maybe not. I just think that the way that this is, we'll unpack this. We're going to have to take a break soon. But I do not appreciate the way that this has rolled out in the complete and utter failure to properly care for our allies and the people that we need to be protecting right now. Because he already blew through the deadline that Trump established. And has already, you know, but also what are all of these months since that May 1st deadline, et cetera. And there's plenty to talk about. But
if you listen to his speech, which I did, it was fucking nonsense. Like one of the key claims he made is like, well, we couldn't evacuate them because they didn't want to leave yet.
That is unbelievable.
And it was like, Joe, there were 18,000 Afghans waiting mm-hmm. for special immigrant visas denied because the visa system, and in fairness, it was the Trump administration that fucked up the visa system more than it had been fucked up. But you could have pushed that shit.
You could have expedited that.
Like
you're the president of the United States.
At least the whole framing of
2,000 Afghans out, right? Roughly, since the start of the poll, we got about 2,000 of the Afghans who were working with us out. 18,000 of them had said prior to Biden taking office, "I need to get the fuck out of here."
Yeah. We've known, and like the whole point, like the whole framing of like Biden as president is like, we're back. We're going to fix all the things that we all said were bad.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that wasn't going to be the case, but my God, that like, well, they don't all want to go.
Fuck you, Joe.
Unbelievable.
We should take a quick break and then come back and talk a lot about this mixed messaging because there's plenty to
You know whose messaging on Afghanistan is entirely consistent?
Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin.
Raytheon.
Our primary sponsors, Lockheed Martin and Raytheon.
Diet Cola.
Who say Taliban, Shmaliban, as long as they need targeting software for drone-based missiles, we don't care who they are.
We're your
That's the
Taliban.
Lockheed Raytheon guarantee.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we're back.
And we love it.
We love it, folks.
We love to be back, don't we, folks?
I know. So we were talking about Biden and his speech and the blame shifting. And you know, 18,000 Afghanistan citizens did not want to leave their country. And then there's also the line of, well, we needed people there. Otherwise, it would have not instilled confidence that we believed the Afghan government would succeed. So there's that.
Performative confidence. And then, very good.
Yes, and shifting the buck to Donald Trump, all of it.
I love, there's a Kamala Harris tweet today. Like, this is sort of the general framing is like, now the mission is to get people out. Pardon me? You just thought of this?
And the other part of his speech that really upset me, and I don't have the direct quote, but was the framing of it. So Biden has assured the public and has talked about how the government would last, how it would, at least for a while, that the Taliban wouldn't take things over immediately. And he was obviously very, very wrong. But in the speech, he mentioned how he put that on Afghanistan. they're not willing to do it. What?
They're not willing and ready to fight. They don't care enough.
It is disgusting. And
that's particularly, I want to find the statistic I was looking at, but like there's a lot of, when we'll talk about them, the Afghan military was on balance a fucking disaster, largely at sort of the operational command level. But a lot of Afghan security forces died fighting. As of April, they were taking 30 to 50, sometimes more casualties a day. And that was without logistical support. They lost more people in the last year than the US did in the entire war. Like, to say that they were not fighting is
tens
inaccurate.
Of thousands of people. Like, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. They were fighting. And at least a lot of them were fighting. They also had no legit. We'll talk about.
We have created this situation.
Yeah, we create. So the Afghan military was built in imitation of the U.S. military in certain ways. And by that, so the way the U.S. military functions and what makes it so deadly in an operational capacity at kind of like a unit level. Is that we have a very effective combined arms strategy. So you've got your infantry, you've got your armored units, you've got field artillery, and you've got air support, and they all kind of, and drone support, and they all kind of, they act to provide each other with information, to provide each other with fire support. It's a very effective way of fighting that they've developed over the last couple of decades. And we built the Afghan military in imitation of that. The problem with that kind of military is that it requires an enormous logistic tail, a significant number of people for every one fighter in the field. Not only people to like keep the infantry and stuff supplied, but like you need people to maintain the drones, you need people to fly the drones, you need people to interpret the signal information the drones are getting, you need people to maintain the aircraft that are providing close support, you need people to load those craft, you need people to pilot them, you need people to maintain the armored vehicles and whatnot. You need all of this logistical tail, which we never trained or equipped. We used mercenaries, PMCs, to do all that work in Afghanistan. And we did that because those PMCs were major donors to US politicians and very influential in the Defense Department. And it was hugely profitable for them. That's what one of the most disgusting things is that like Fox brought Eric Prince, mercenary warlord, on to talk about like why Biden had fucked up. And he was like, well, people like me weren't listened to. And the reality is that a huge chunk of why the strategy, like we always, basically the entire time we were in Afghanistan, there were more PMCs in country than U.S. servicemen and women. And part of the reason for that is that they're deniable assets. Doesn't matter how many of those fuckers die. It doesn't matter what happens to them or what you do with them, because none of that needs to be reported, right? Every U.S. soldier who dies, that's a matter of public record, right? You have a right to information about that. It doesn't matter if it's some Blackwater motherfucker. And Prince was one of the number one dude who lobbied lobbied for things to work that way in both Afghanistan and Iraq. And that's how things worked in both Afghanistan and Iraq. And the downside of that is that when Biden pulled out, he pulled those PMCs out. He pulled that logistical support out. So not only did the Afghan military lose U.S. air support and U.S. fighters, they lost access to the people who made their logistical tail possible. And there was just no real chance that they were going to continue functioning. Now, there were other issues. For one thing, there were something like 10,000 generals in the Afghan military, which numbered about 350,000 people, which is ridiculous. And I encountered similar things in Iraq, right? you meet all these people who are like quote unquote generals. And the reality is that like there's somebody's cousin, there's somebody's uncle, they're mm. getting, and they're grifters, right? A huge amount. Basically everyone at the top of the Afghan military was a grifter. And the way it works is like those guys, the high ranking dudes, are getting kickbacks from these PMCs and from sometimes straight from the State Department or the Defense Department. And they're grifting money from all these, you know, oh, Halliburton comes in to build a hospital and they pay this local warlord or this general a bunch of money. And he arranges security. And he also gets, so the Afghan government says like, okay, you're in charge of 10,000 men. Here's their payment. Here's the salary for these 10,000 troopers. You have to hand it to them. And so you decide as this corrupt asshole, like, well, I'm getting paid for 10,000 dudes. What if I just have 1,000 dudes and I pocket mm-hmm. the salary for, and so that was, and that was the same thing happened in, you know, when Mosul was taken by ISIS. It was like, there's supposed to be like 10,000 Iraqi army soldiers well-equipped with U.S. weapons in the city. And like 1,500 ISIS guys defeated them. And it's because there was actually like nobody there because mm-hmm. like the whole army was existed on paper for the process of getting a couple of people rich, right? So there is a huge amount of blame for the people on the top of the Afghan military. And that's important to talk about because in part, the reason why it was that way is because we let it be that way. Because right. we wanted, because it was very profitable for a lot of Americans for it to be that way. And so that should be acknowledged, and it should be, in fact, people should be punished for it over here. But saying they weren't willing to fight for it ignores, again, the tens of thousands of Afghan soldiers who died fighting.
Yeah.
Which is pretty fucked up, IMO.
It is fucked up. It is, it's humbling. It's destroying, we already have no legitimacy anyway, but this just further does it for us.
We're not doing great. We're not sending our best.
We never. I mean, one of the things that's interesting to me, there's this thing that's actually kind of admirable about the military, which is that if you actually read a lot of their documentation, it's extremely accurate and extremely clear-minded. This has been the case for climate change, right? For like 15 or 20 years, the Defense Department has been putting out
article that you sent us. Everyone, yeah. Check
well, there's the
out.
Afghanistan yeah. papers that like
yes,
and that was stuff that they by. Did try to hide. Like that, right, the Afghanistan right. is like because obviously, and I'm not saying there's a lot of blame in DOD. A lot of particularly like all of our high-ranking military leaders over there were attempting to hide the problem, but they also were producing a significant amount of documentation that any American could have access to know how fucked up things were, which is not to, the Afghanistan papers is a fascinating story the Washington Post got, and there's a lot of malfeasance on behalf of the DOD. But this Vice article, which was written by Matthew Galt, include like it is just sort of, it's talking about specifically what's the acronym here?
SIGAR.
Oh, SIGAR. Yeah. So the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, which was a government agency that started keeping track of the war and its material costs in 2008. And so they've been, you know, primarily investigating the $144 billion the U.S. put aside for reconstruction. So this was just covering kind of U.S. efforts to build a functional state and economy in Afghanistan, not like after, not fighting and stuff, like specifically our attempts to actually make Afghanistan a functioning country. And like 12 years of these documents, not a single piece of good news. Like just an unmitigated disaster. One of the stories,
like embarrassing stuff.
Like shameful. I'm just going to quote directly from it about the goats. Yeah.
The goats.
This is Matthew Galt writing. Whenever I think about the U.S. government's failure in Afghanistan, I remember the goats. In 2013, a government project meant to kickstart Afghanistan's economy granted Colorado State University $1.5 million to start a goat farm in Herat Province, Afghanistan. It bought 5 cashmere-producing Italian goats and transported them to Afghanistan for the purposes of breeding them in large numbers and turning Afghanistan into a cashmere-producing hotspot. But CSU ran into problems immediately. It had 300 goats, only 9 of them the expensive cashmere goats from Italy. The college was bad at farming, and the expensive Italian goats caught a disease that killed most of them. Worst, they were spending $50,000 a year to feed the rest, an incredible amount of cash to spend on an animal that will eat almost anything. When CSU tried to turn the farm over to locals and told them that what they were spending to feed the goats, the Afghans called the farm a poisoned chalice. Keep in mind that Afghan farms have been raising goats for generations and already had cashmere produced. Animals. According to a goat expert who testified in the fallout, the college had no idea what they were doing, and the CSU staff determined what the project should cost, despite no one at CSU having any experience with cashmere. I feel like I know 30 people who could have done this project on their own for 50 grand total. Because, again, not hard to keep goats alive.
So what is this?
They're white, goats.
White savior bullshit of like the school project of let's go there.
The
and
Afghans
bring them
just
goats.
Don't know how to raise goats.
Teach them about the goats.
And just
they've been raising
like,
goats longer than you have known about goats.
Raising like, goats, the sentence, raising goats for generations and already had cashmere producing animals.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
And again, it's. And everything, every single attempt to like build up the economy, to build up like, so yeah, there was a, this is also from a Cigar report, and this came out in 2016, and it was about the Gardez Hospital, which was a hospital that the United States built in the Paktia province in eastern Afghanistan as part of our, you know, efforts to nation build. It was built to treat civilians. Construction began in 2008 as part of a three-year contract with the U.S. Agency for International Development. And it was supposed to be handed over to the Afghan Ministry of Health in 2011. That never happened. For one thing, the completion date kept being pushed back first to 2013 as a result of issues with an Afghan building contractor. In October of 2013, when it was supposed to be done, Sigar found that they had overpaid the contractor by $500,000 for diesel fuel alone. And so this caused like a bunch of issues. By the summer of 2014, the hospital still was not completed. It was supposed to be done in 2011. It took another year and a half for the hospital to be completed. The almost done hospital cost the U.S. $14.6 million. And then an inspection immediately after construction by Sigar auditors found 42 construction deficiencies. Quote, despite millions of dollars, and this is from an NPR article, despite millions of dollars and years of work, parts of the roof were leaking or contained standing water. Doors were missing handles. One of the water towers was leaking. The hospital had not been reinforced to withstand earthquakes. The hospital is built on the active Chemin fault line. Fire alarms were missing in some parts of the hospital, and if there was a fire, there was no emergency lighting. Some exit signs pointed in the wrong direction. Like,
is that bad for like a hospital? Or?
Yeah, it's not great. It's just a tiny example, but
well, don't worry, we'll just bomb the hospital eventually.
Yeah, it's full of hospitals that like either never got built or were never built practically. It's just there's a million of these stories.
Can I read from this Vice article?
Cutting corners. Yeah.
This is one more from the Vice article. There was Camp Leatherneck, a U.S. Marine base in the Helmand Province. It cost $36 million to construct the 64,000-square-foot command center. It came with an air conditioning system, expensive electronics, and office furniture. The U.S. never used it and couldn't decide if it should demolish the facility or turn it over to the Afghans. The Pentagon eventually turned it over to the Afghan National Army, leaving behind 420,000 water bottles, but setting fire to 10,000 MREs and destroying 7,500 computers. The Pentagon left the televisions untouched.
They just lit this, just destroyed all the computers.
Unbelievable. Like, the fucking audacity. Fucked. Like, just, like, invade your...
Take just, them out.
Unbelievable.
Take the computers with you.
And just, like, the debate of, like, they weren't sure if they should demolish it or turn it, like... Why are you there? What are you doing there?
$36 million. To demolish it? Unbelievable. Anyway, I just really wanted to share that one as well. Oh, there's the other one about the facilities that they made that they put something that they like sealed it with.
Yeah, they insulated it with flammable polyurethane.
They never changed it. They said that the soldiers staying there are fit and fast. They could get out quickly.
Yeah.
It's not funny at all.
So one of the things that is important to understand is we talk about how the military industrial complex is a big grift, how like all these wars are grifts. I don't think people understand the degree, how shameless. There's this idea that the grifts are like, you know, congressmen and defense contractors working out in exchange for votes. You know, we'll make sure there's jobs or we'll keep producing these tanks in your area. Or like, you know, this idea that like, yeah, you're hiring mercenaries and like, so these companies profit there, or you're taking the oil or something like and you know, that kind of stuff happens. But when I'm talking about the degree to which the war on terror was a shameless grift. There's the best story that kind of illustrates that came from Iraq in 2007, which is the largest transfer of cash in the history of the Federal Reserve was done in Iraq. And it was done after the invasion when the United States flew $12 billion in shrink-wrapped $100 bills into the country and then lost it. Just gone. Just like handed out.
What was the number?
Stolen
again?
$12 billion.
Oh,
the largest transfer of cash in Federal Reserve history. It was supposed to be spent. It was spent in a variety of ways, but like we didn't account for most of it. Like we really don't know where some of it was just taken. Like pallets just taken from airports and shit. Some of it was spent, you know, on bribes and spent to like pay for stuff, but like most of the funds, like a significant majority, were lost to corruption and waste. Thousands of people who did not exist were receiving pay, and it was like the money was just taken and handed to Iraqi elites or handed to like God knows who, probably a bunch of fucking foreigners in the country too, and Americans. There was a single $500 million expenditure in security funding, the explanation for which was listed on a memo as TBD. Which means to be determined. $500 million that were paid out for reasons to be figured
just
out
like,
later.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. We need it. $1 billion.
We need it like, for
again. This is and like when I say like these wars are grifts, I'm not even just talking about like the high level. Oh, you've got these kind of congressmen talking with Lockheed Martin executives about like how to deal with appropriations contracts. I'm saying we flew $12 billion in cash and no one knows where it went.
Yeah.
It just gone.
Like, it's money pits.
I mean, it could have ended up in
money and death pits.
Money and death pits. Yeah. Just shameless, incompetent grifts. And like, I don't know, there's so much that's fucking infuriating. One of the things that's frustrating is we started talking about this earlier, like the extent to which Afghanistan was like the big story in America for a few months after the invasion. And then we just, because it became clear that like nothing good was going to come out of U.S. fuckery in that country.
And there's no
we pivoted to Iraq, you know?
Yeah.
Well, right. And it was a sort of acceptance, like that's, you know, it's the forever war, right? It's the thing that we do. It quickly turned into like, yeah, we're just there now. And that's just how it is.
And again, nobody wanted to pay attention to it. Nobody wanted to think about the unpleasant thing. Or to pay attention to the fact that we're.
And it's, I mean, the thing that's fucked up about what you just said, Katie, is that I don't know that this is going to matter in terms of next year's election or the next presidential election. Like, obviously, the Republicans are trying to make this like a thing to hit Biden with, and you know. Plenty to criticize Biden on, but I don't know that anyone's going to give a shit. I don't know
there
is any degree. I don't know that there is any degree of botching shit in Afghanistan that could have actually hurt a U.S. president because we just don't give a shit. Voters don't like. We'll see. Maybe this has been a big enough fuck up that it will have an impact. But like,
I mean, Bush got reelected.
Bush got reelected. Like, Obama got reelected after the surge, which was an unmitigated disaster in Afghanistan. Because we just
but nobody Americans was really paying attention. But yeah, I don't think that this. I think that everybody will forget about this in a month, move on to the next thing, or not forget about it, but they'll bring it up.
It's just one wonders if
the truth is that this was going to happen. I mean, not the execution of how this happened didn't have to be this way, but we knew they've known despite what Biden said.
we've always
known what was going to happen when the U.S.
Well, they're gonna use it like I mean, you know, who knows next year what that worst year ever will bring,
giant spiders, Cody.
Yeah, a couple worst year evers from now, but you know they're gonna be using it not as like we should get out or we didn't get out well or this or this. It's gonna be the refugee thing, right? Like the bringing people in that will make us less white.
Yeah, it's
This is some actually something I wanted to bring up real quick. Just like,
hold on a second. Yeah, that's what I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, baby.
And then, thank you for bringing up the ads. And then once we bring up the ads, you can bring up whatever other thing you wanted to bring up. Be right back.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back.
Did it happen? We came back?
Oh, yeah. We built back better. We built back better. We are now supported by Halliburton.
Fine cashmere.
Let me read this new ad for us. Hey, Cody, Katie, have you guys heard of the island nation of Haiti?
Uh-huh.
Mm.
You know what would go really well with an island nation of Haiti?
Hmm.
Like, a bunch of miniature American flags and a 20-year occupation that funnels tens of billions of dollars into an oil contractor and its subsidiaries.
Ayo.
That wasn't what I was going to say, but I'll take your word for it.
The official stance of Worst Year Ever is, let's get Haiti. Let's get on in there. Just get on in there.
Use a promo code. Where else could we go?
Yeah, what else are we going to do?
What else are we going to put our stuff?
Cody, what did you want to bring up?
It's just going to keep happening. There's a...
every problem?
You're right. Don't bring it up then.
All the things. No, like the Tucker Carlson of it all, the right wing sort of reaction to this and sort of using it for their weird...
What have they been saying?
Bullshit.
I'm sure it's been productive.
I mean, the what you expect. There's a tendency to sometimes on some people to be like, at least Tucker's anti-imperialist. And I just want people to realize and understand and keep understanding. He's not. He would be imperial. He doesn't think these places deserve our help. He thinks they're, to quote Tucker Carlson, semi-illiterate primitive monkeys. That's a direct quote from him. He doesn't think... he wants to get out because it's a waste of American soldiers. If there was another nation that was worthy, he would be all for invading that country. And he's just it's just frustrating. We don't need to talk about him. We've talked about him before on the show. We all know. It's just this using vague, like, I'm anti-war. No, he's not. He's anti certain wars.
Yeah.
He's
anti wars that don't make him feel good.
And now it's just going to be like the whole, like, even like Charlie Kirk's like, they did this specifically so they can bring a bunch of refugees in and change our demographics.
Yeah, Stephen Miller's saying that shit too.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's why. That's why it happened.
Apparently, Trump scrubbed, like, they...
He sure did, yeah. He purged references website. To... I want to be clear. I think we're all on the same page about this. I also think we should have gotten the fuck out of Afghanistan. And I am not famously, Cody, you and I have had some debates over this. I'm not actually categorically against, like, intervention necessarily, because I've been to some places where the people there were like, yeah, this is why my family's alive. It's clear that intervention in Afghanistan was, you know, there are things that are worse because a lot of things that are worse because the Taliban are in charge, but you also have to take into account we were bombing shitloads of people. Civilian casualties continue to raise throughout the war, raised significantly during, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not just because the Taliban are going door-to-door, murdering female journalists, murdering like people who were political leaders, women's rights activists, like horrible shit is happening. Horrible shit was also happening before, and I think we had to get the fuck out. I'm very supportive of
absolutely.
Of not, but also there are, I think the best count I've heard is at least about 90,000 Afghans who had worked with the U.S. government, who had worked with journalists, who were, you know, women's rights activists, people who needed to be evacuated, and that should have been the number one priority once
before
Biden,
beforehand.
Yes,
and
beforehand.
That would have been you
a
could
part
have made,
of this plan, yeah. A part of this extension, a part of this not meeting the fucking deadline. Sorry, go ahead, Robert.
Yeah. Well, there's a thing. Yeah.
You could have made
they
Joe
brought
Biden.
This up too.
Yeah.
Like the Biden and Harris administration have brought this up.
They knew.
About, like,
yeah.
About they both they brought like up this general idea too in regards to like South American countries, and like the global South and like how we contribute to these issues that bring people here. Mm. We cause these problems, and that like, what do you think is happening in Afghanistan?
Oh, why, they know. Like,
They know. There's information that just leaked out that, like, they one of the reasons why they did not start the evacuation earlier, get more people out, is because they were worried about being hit with that during the midterms, with like bringing in immigrants and shit.
Cowards!
It's great.
Oh my god!
There was absolutely a way Joe Biden could have taken a principled, even courageous, moral stance, saying, "Hey, this was a mistake. A lot of American." Elected leaders made. I have my own part in that. I am not going to continue that mistake. I am not going to pass this on to a fifth American president. We are getting out and we are going to devote enormous resources to making sure that all of the tens of thousands of people who worked with us get out safely because we fucked up and they shouldn't pay for that fuck up. And that would have been a principled moral stance that I think reasonable people would have all been like, all right, well, that's the best you can do. The war was a disaster long before you were president. At least we got these people out, whatever. That would have been, I think, the way to handle it. Like,
would have been a better way.
I'm not saying we should have stayed in Afghanistan for another 4 years. I think getting out was the right thing to do, but there was a way to do that ethically and try to end on a note that was less craven, selfish and evil than the rest of the war had been.
And flat
that
would have out actually been flat out embarrassing.
Yeah, we could have ended a war based primarily upon funneling cash to defense contractors and burnishing political reputations selfishly. We could have ended this incredibly selfish criminal war with a gesture of like, the best we can do is rescue these people. And at least we will end this on a note of not enriching ourselves at their expense.
And yet, that's not what happened.
Sorry, I know why people, am I even talking about how things could have worked?
People have pointed this out a lot, but I think I just will, for us as well, just how wrong Biden has been at every juncture.
Oh, it's amazing.
Over the past 20 years, you know, I mean, getting involved with this in the first place, trying to like have us not. He didn't want to go in and kill Osama bin Laden. You know, the assurances that, you know, the government will hold and that the Taliban won't advance. This whole process of extricating ourselves and the decision to not remove all of these people, not just the people that helped us, but their families.
It's just craven and shameful. It's craven and shameful all the way down. Every single U.S. leader who has had really, and I include all of the military brass in this too, a pyramid of shit from fucking Bush,
a documented Trey pyramid of shit.
Obama
and like no
documented.
And no-
documented by the shitters.
Right. And knowing
while
and
they
like
were the pooping, they wrote down who they were pooping on and how
they were
badly
like, we're pooping
it smelled.
On this. And also writing it like in the margins, like, and we shouldn't be doing this. Like,
this
we shouldn't be
horrible.
Pooping right now. This is
we're
bad.
We're pooping
this,
right on these people. Yeah.
Like, just every step of the way, knowing that it's not working, knowing that it's a failure, but presenting it as though it's not. Like, we're making progress here. We're doing this. We're staying the course, all that kind of stuff. It's like, but you know.
Yeah. No, I don't know. It's so fucking bad. And it's, you know, there's no way people will correctly point out that, like, for one thing, we have not, we're not going to spend nearly enough time here just talking about the suffering of regular Afghan people, not just now, but through the entire war. This is such a big subject. The scale of the fuck up is so big. There's no covering this in an hour, you know?
Right.
But it's just... Ah, man, it's so fucking bleak. I wish we didn't do terrible things incompetently.
We could do good things instead.
Yeah.
Or
things
what,
sound
you know,
nice.
Stay the course, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredibly depressing. We've just said that over and over again.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably continue to talk about this and talk to people. I would love to bring one of your contacts in. And Robert, I'm very grateful that we host this show with you, because you have much more expertise in this area than most people out here commenting on it.
I'm not particularly knowledgeable about Afghanistan. I always wanted to get over there. I never managed to. You know, ironically, right now is probably about the safest time in our lives to be a foreign journalist in Afghanistan. Like, you've got these people, you know, from like CNN and stuff who are over there like filming, and people are talking about like how dangerous. It's really not right now, because the Taliban, number one, is in control, and number two, don't want
to
kill foreign journalists right
they
now.
Are like, going
they're
to do
starting
their, best.
Their big press thing. Like, those people are, I think,
pretty
they're
like talking
safe
about
at the
inclusivity
moment.
And stuff.
This is their chance to, you know, not alarm the world anymore, and hope to be legitimized, which they have a chance of doing, especially with like China and Russia.
Yeah.
I would say, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it'll, I mean, there's a lot of resources in Afghanistan to sell that have been like, Eric Prince was trying to get like a massive rare earth mineral operation going in there. And like, at no point was shit stable enough under the US occupation to do it, but the Taliban probably can guarantee enough stability to extract shit, I'm sure. Or at least there's a decent chance, which isn't a good thing. It's just a thing that'll probably happen.
Right.
I don't know. You know, there's a couple of things that keep running through my head thinking about this. One of them is my favorite work of foreign journalism about the war in Afghanistan, which is Sebastian Younger's book War. And he wrote it during, there was a single U.S. Army platoon that was embedded in the Korangal Valley, which is was the furthest, I think, north point. It was the furthest out point that the U.S. had any combat outposts in Afghanistan. And we picked that specific outpost because it was like 100 feet further than the British ever got. Like, that was literally like why we put those guys there. They were there for a year. And in the year those 30 guys were in Afghanistan, that unit of, again, 30 dudes was involved in about a quarter of all U.S. firefights in Afghanistan. Like, they a tremendous amount of combat. And Younger was there for about 6 months of the year they were there. And he was there with Tim Hetherington, his photojournalist friend. And they talked to those guys during, you know, the period of combat and stayed with them for years afterwards. And Younger wrote this book, War, that's a very good meditation on what combat does to people. And there's a line in there about the Javelin missile, which is a very advanced kind of man-portable missile that we issue soldiers for blowing shit up, you know, when they're out in the field. And the line is, I'm paraphrasing here, a Javelin missile costs $80,000. The fact that it is fired by a man who doesn't make that in a year at a man who won't make that in a lifetime is so ridiculous it almost makes the war seem winnable. If you're wondering like where the money went, it's shit like that. It's $80,000 missiles fired by 19-year-olds who legally cannot buy a beer in their home country.
who were not born when the war
when
started.
This started.
Well, who were babies. In
baby
fairness.
Babies. Maybe
babies.
Okay,
babies.
So okay, okay.
Yeah.
Tiny,
babies.
Tiny little babies.
So I've been interviewing, and again, I don't have the transcripts yet. I've been interviewing this anarchist activist who's located in Afghanistan. And I don't have all of their answers translated, but the person because I had to interview them through someone else who was an Iranian anarchist activist. And I asked them, my question was, I'm curious, as an anarchist, how do they feel about the difficulty of opposing an authoritarian religious movement when the only counter to that movement is an imperialist military? How do they navigate being stuck in the middle of that situation? I have not gotten their response yet, but my source, who's an Iranian activist, responded, I think the answers of the Iranian and Afghan people are the same. The situation did not come about because of the vacuum the U.S. created by leaving. The U.S. was always present in Afghanistan when the Taliban took provinces, counties, cities, and committed all the atrocities we witnessed. They just did nothing. Even worse, they filled their pockets and the pockets of the Afghan regime and private military corporations, plus all the atrocities they committed in Afghanistan. But nothing was given to the people of Afghanistan. Even before the Taliban, our comrade wanted to immigrate because of poverty and the lack of jobs that plagued Afghanistan. The counterinsurgency tactics worked really well. Because of the poverty and division between everyone, people became so subservient that they didn't have a chance to wake up from their reverie and stage an uprising.
Also, the people were lied to at every stage of this pretense war. Kabul was supposed to be safe until the Americans left, but even that turned out to be a lie. It's not that hard to hate both liars.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah,
Yeah, good shit.
What was that one thing I'd seen? Like,
yeah.
This isn't directly related to what you were just saying, but I remembered it. Also, just part of this framing of how it could happen so fast is, well, because they knew this was happening. A lot of Taliban were making deals with different, you know, community members or people that were preparing, you know, and ready to say, like, yeah, well, we're just, there's no point in continuing to die here.
And they, you know, they started in these, the Taliban's kind of started their takeover in these kind of rural outposts because the Afghan army had kind of continued a policy established by the U.S. where you had these kind of far flung forward operating bases in order to kind of like lock down specific regions to stop the Taliban from moving freely through them. And we can debate whether or not that was ever a good strategy, but it's only a maintainable strategy when you have air support, right? Both
right.
for supplying your forces and for carrying out strikes in order to fend off attacks. And because the Afghan military's ability to do that was completely degraded when we pulled the contractors out, these forces had no support and no resupply. In addition to that, because of all of the grift and corruption in the Afghan government, they weren't getting paid. So part of why huge numbers of these guys just surrendered without a fight is the Taliban said, and the Taliban was pretty honest about this, hey, if you guys just put down your guns and leave, we'll let you go home. We'll even give you some pocket money to buy food and stuff. Mm. And a lot of like fucking Afghan soldiers are like, well, okay. Like, it's either that or die without bullets for nothing.
Right. We've
talked about this in other contexts too, where it's like, yeah, it's all bad. But it, and you're going to have people who are going to quote unquote support people who keep them alive and give them money. Yeah. Right.
I guess I'll take the option that probably means I go home to my family rather than definitely dying for a bunch of grifters who will absolutely flee the country ahead of me.
Yeah.
I'd like to give a brief shout out to everybody in the right wing sphere using the Taliban to dunk on people with pronouns. And Facebook.
Oh yeah.
No, I didn't see this.
For their censorious
nature.
It's
amazing. It's amazing. If only we had been more like the Taliban, we could have won.
Unbelievable. These fucking people. It's just
part of what's so funny about that is that the only successful use of the US military to support a foreign like military force in a counterinsurgency campaign of any of our lifetimes happened in northeast Syria, like a movement that was profoundly politically radical and not at all like fucking Jack Posobiec calls them woke all the time. Like the fucking, you know, it's exaggerated somewhat, but there was a profoundly progressive movement. And the reason why in that one and only case shit worked is because it wasn't a giant grift. Number one, we found a group of people who were already successfully fighting. And we were just kind of like, what do you need? Like in order to do this better. And we provided them with support rather than coming in and creating our own thing, which is also what, like, in Syria, you had kind of the CIA chunk of things, which was, we're going to try and create our own, or, like, we're going to try to build up this, like, kind of rebel capacity to fight Assad, and, like, just did not really work in the long run. Kind
of
a disaster.
CIA didn't succeed at the thing
they
tried to
wasn't
do?
Wasn't successful.
Interesting.
Meanwhile, the DOD was like, well, these people are already fighting very well against ISIS. What if we just make it easier for them? And anyway, I don't know. Everyone saying anything is dumb. Don't listen to anybody.
It's true. Don't listen to podcasts.
Listen to or
especially
anybody.
Not
don't
us.
Don't listen to podcasts or there, people.
It's just very, very complicated and a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it's also like there's. I keep seeing stuff like that where it's like it's actually more nuanced than that. But that's always. That's usually said to, like, shut down the thing being said.
No, because the reality is it is incredibly complicated. The Afghan politics, the history of the region, why the... And people get a lot of stuff wrong. Like, everyone's saying, well, we armed the Taliban, you know, in the first place to fight the Soviets, doesn't know what they're talking about, because that never happened. And in fact, the Taliban came to power fighting a lot of the people that we had armed to fight the Soviets, because a bunch of those guys were messy sons of bitches. Like, it's a whole thing. But like, we didn't create the Taliban to fight the Soviets. The Taliban were largely a reaction to the people that we were arming to fight the Soviets. Anyway,
we just love arming people.
We do love to arm people.
It's a real American pastime.
And there's a bunch of shit people get wrong, but like the fact that the history is complicated, and the fact that like the scale of the fuck up is massive and complicated, doesn't mean that the gist of what happened and went wrong in Afghanistan is complicated. What went wrong is the only purpose of the war on the U.S. end, really, when you look at it from like an operational capacity. There were two things going on. One of those things was making billions of dollars for a small number of very corrupt people in the defense industry and the tech industry. And the other thing that was going on was politicians passing the buck so that they didn't have to make any unpopular decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what went on. And because of that, this incompetent and corrupt military leadership in Afghanistan was allowed to continue to metastasize in such a way that, like, the military never really had much operate, and the government never had much operational capacity. This supposedly democratic government was never as effective at providing for basic needs in a lot of regions of the country as the fucking Taliban was. And you had, like, all of that results from the fact that this, for the United States, the most powerful actor in the region, was never anything but a grift. Like, that's the core of it. That's why it went so fucking wrong, because there was never any attempt to do anything from the most influential actors in our government but profit from it. And so, yeah, of course it was a fucking disaster. And the people who suffered most are not even U.S. soldiers. They're Afghan citizens who died in massive numbers.
But some don't want to leave.
And who suffered in massive numbers.
I think, by my calculations, about 18,000 of them don't want to leave. Mm-hmm. They would rather be there and take their chances.
God, fucking Biden.
I am sure that we will continue talking about this.
One would imagine.
But you're right. You can't possibly do the whole thing justice. And there's
20 year war.
There's a lot of shit that did go down. It's certainly complicated. But like the gist of what went wrong is a bunch of criminals who were incompetent invaded Afghanistan because it would help their polling numbers and make their friends rich.
It's both complicated and incredibly simple.
Yeah. It's very simple when you look at our role in it, right? Mm-hmm. The history of the region, all the different, like, that's very complicated. But when you look at what we did, pretty simple.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, Robert, thank you again for leading this conversation, because I found informative.
Go read someone who knows what they're, you know.
And then there's
book,
that.
Yeah. A book, one book I always recommend if you want like kind of earlier history on Afghanistan, particularly about like the British attempt to invade Afghanistan, because there's some fun parallels, is The Return of a King for early Afghan history. I'm still kind of, most of my reading on this has been like just kind of journalism and like reports on, you know, like the ones we quoted. But there's a couple books that have come out pretty recently that are kind of tracing the whole sweep of the war on terror and like why it was such a disaster. I'm going to check out a couple of those and see if I think any of them are very good. But I don't know. You know, I always recommend, the other place I recommend is, let me see if they've actually got anything out about this today, is Mongol Media, which is a collective of artists and writers from what they call the periphery, which is what a lot of, you know, a lot of Americans either call the Third World or the Global South. I think periphery is a much better term, and it's kind of the periphery in relation to how it's seen by people in, you know, in the center of empire. But
right.
There's some good articles that some of them have written about growing up, and like some of these folks are fixers and like local journalists, and so like they've had this experience of kind of like working with Westerners and trying to like tailor content about their homelands for Westerners. And there's an article on Mongol Media called Afghanistan, A Personal History, that was published in 2017, that I recommend reading if you kind of want, you know, an Afghan person's perspective on some of this.
Right.
From that period.
Ooh, interesting right. concept.
Yeah.
yeah, not just for white people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sorry that, like, obviously this is going, this was a very, like, focused on the US and fuck ups, because this is a US politics podcast.
Yeah.
So that was obviously going to be more our bag, but that's not the most important story here. It's just exactly. the one that we're most equipped to tell.
Yeah. And I also wanted to plug Props Podcast Hood Politics that also covered what's going on in Afghanistan. So check Great. That out.
All right, guys, we will be back next week. And I wish I had something funny or good to share and say right now, but I don't.
Worst year pod.
Worst year ever.
Welcome to a not very good year.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.